wonderful, majestic world around us, it's time for Dear Science. Thanks to MOTAT, the museum inspiring the innovators of tomorrow.
So I believe now we are joined over the phone by Marcus Jones, is that right?
I'm here.
Hi Marcus, how are you doing?
Good, how are you?
Great, thanks. And we're also here with Emily.
Kia ora Marcus.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm very well, thanks. Great to be here.
Apologies for that. So, what do we have in Dear Science today? What are we talking about?
Okay, so we're back to Omicron again, or back to COVID. There is some research. So there's all sorts of variants of Omicron that are currently circulating in New Zealand. But there's two variants, the BA.4 and the BA.5, that are starting to enter the country. And they have been proved to be a little bit more stealthy at evading people's immune defense than several other of their predecessors. It's not clear whether vaccines or previous infections will confer any or how much protection against these new variants. But recent research has shown that previous infection with an older variant, such as Alpha, Beta, or Delta, offers some protection against reinfection with BA.4 or BA.5, and that a prior Omicron infection is substantially more effective. And that was the conclusion of a study that evaluated all of Qatar's COVID-19 cases since they got waves of BA.4 and BA.5 earlier this year. And so this work has been posted. It hasn't yet been peer-reviewed. And it really deals with this question that everyone around the world has got a different COVID history. Some people haven't been infected or haven't been immunized. Other people have been immunized but not infected. Other people have been infected but not immunized, and there's been different strains. And so different histories equip people with different immunity against upcoming infection. And it's important moving forward that we understand how different all of these different cases affect people's immunity. And so to see how much protection previous infections offer against the two new Omicron subvariants, these guys in Qatar looked at all the recorded cases between the 7th of May this year, which is when BA.4 and 0.5 were first entered that country, and the 4th of July. And they looked at the number of people known to have been infected previously who tested positive or negative for COVID-19 and identified which infections were caused by BA.4 or BA.5. And the researchers found that infection with a pre-Omicron variant prevented reinfection with an effectiveness of 28.3%, so nearly 30%, and prevented symptomatic reinfection with either subvariant, BA.4 or 5, with an effectiveness of about 15%. So if you'd had Alpha, Beta, or Delta, then there was about a 15% chance if you were infected, you wouldn't get any symptoms. Prior infection with one of the other Omicron strains granted stronger immunity, a stronger immune response. So it was about 79% effective at preventing BA.4 or 5 reinfection, and 76% effective at preventing symptomatic reinfection.
Did it seem to matter how long of a gap there was between the first infection and the second one?
That's a good question, and the answer is I don't think they know, because this has become such a complex picture with all these different strains, roaming around. It's very, very hard to judge different people's histories, what strains they've been infected with already, what strains, what vaccines they've had, and things like that. And so, yeah, none of these were infected prior to May the seventh with BA.4 or 5. But prior to that, it's not clear that they knew when they were infected with the alpha, beta, or whatever different strains.
And a bit of a follow-up on that, does that mean with a proliferation of different variants and the number of times people are getting infected, it's going to be harder and harder to research and isolate specific infections of specific strains over time?
The picture is certainly becoming more complicated, yes. And although this is potentially good news, you know, if you've had a prior infection, then you may have some protection against these potentially more dangerous Omicron strains. It also is becoming clear that the more times you get infected, the chances of getting long-term effects, these long COVID effects, also increase. So you may not be infected, you know, very strongly, or you may get a very strong or very serious infection, but the symptoms could linger for quite a long time.
So what else do we have in the science news?
So there's a story about the origin of warm-blooded mammals. So you and I and most other humans are warm-blooded, and mammals are obviously warm-blooded. But we all evolved from sort of reptile-like ancestors that were cold-blooded. And it's not clear when that transition from cold-blooded animals to warm-blooded animals or endotherms actually happened. So some studies have suggested that it emerged as recently as 66 million years ago. Other studies put it as far away as 300 million years ago. So that's quite a wide time range. And it's difficult to pinpoint exactly when that trait happened. So you know, warm-blooded mammals are able to regulate their own body temperature. Obviously, cold-blooded animals are not. And in order to try and pinpoint that date, a team of researchers has been looking at the inner ear structure and physiology of living vertebrates and vertebrates from the fossil record. And when they analyzed the inner ear canal. So the inner ear is interesting because it can be used as a sort of a proxy for body temperature. So the movement of fluid through the canals in the inner ear help the body monitor head position and motion. So that's why if you often get an ear infection, you sometimes have vision or balance problems. And the fluid's viscosity, that inner ear fluid, that viscosity changes with body temperature. And the research team hypothesized that as body temperature increased and the animals became more active, the shape of the ear canals would also have evolved to less viscous fluid to preserve that balance and movement effect. And so when they analyzed the in-ear canals of 56 extinct, they're called synapsids, they're the reptile-like ancestors of mammals, and they fitted them into the index. The authors found that the shape of the canals had changed abruptly in the late Triassic period, which lasted from about 237 million to 201 million years ago. And so the authors suggest that this is when synapsids became warm-blooded. According to the index, this transition would have represented an increase in body temperature of about 5 to 10 degrees C. And also an increased metabolism. And the authors conclude that this adaptation gave these early animals, or endotherms, an advantage in dealing with a Triassic climate, which was cooler than that of preceding periods, like the Permian period, which was quite a bit cooler.
Which animals were they looking at particularly?
I was just looking for that, and I don't see exactly which animals. They just call them synapsids, but I can't see exactly what they were, sort of what animals they were.
Are they likely, given the obvious gap in time periods, are they likely to at all resemble the mammals of today?
No, these were reptile-like creatures. So this is a long time ago. This predates the dinosaurs, really, and this is so this is not these are not you know primitive monkeys or anything like that. This is something that's a lot more like a reptile.
Just reading the article here, and it says animals with similar body temperatures would have had difficulty surviving along other reptiles of the time, including archosaurs. Have I pronounced that correctly?
I have no idea. the ancestors of modern birds, yeah.
And do we have a third kind of science news piece?
Sure. So we're going back to modern day, and we're going to talk about climate change, global warming, and sort of good news that unfortunately is coupled to bad news. In the last 20 or 30 years or so, researchers have found that air pollution has diminished. So burning coal or gasoline releases a lot of the gases that drive climate change, but it also releases pollutants that cause smog, and there's particulate matter in the air. And those particles that sit in the air reflect sunlight and actually cool the planet. And so using a lot of satellite observations, researchers have found that this influence of air pollution has dropped by about 30% from 2000 levels. So this means that there's less of the particulate sort of matter that causes smog and things like that in the air, which is good for public health. But it's fortunately, it's bad for global warming because less of the sun's energy is reflected back out into space. And so the cleaner air has effectively boosted the total warming from CO2 emitted over the same time by anywhere from about 15 to 50%. That's quite a big change. So whereas people can breathe more easily because there's less smog, unfortunately, that means that the temperatures have risen more as a result. And so this is a study that's been submitted as a preprint and been supported by work from NASA. And it seems likely that it just adds to this urgency of that we have to address climate change as soon as possible. It's very good that air pollution has been diminished in many places throughout the world, but it just brings the climate change issue into you know starker contrast.
Is this something that was sort of inevitably going to happen as we cleaned up our air quality, or was there some way to possibly prevent this effect?
No, this was always going to happen. This was always going to happen. So, you know, aerosols, these particulate matter, you know, like black carbon or soot, they absorb heat, but they also reflect a lot of the materials back. So sulfates and nitrates have this cooling effect. They reflect a lot of the sunlight back out into space. And any time, and they're formed from, you know, gases that are escaping from the exhaust pipes of cars or from ships or smokestacks and things like that. And as soon as those things were cleaned up, then air pollution was going to drop and this effect was going to happen. So there was no way around this. I'm not sure they predicted it. Maybe they did. I'm not sure. But it just means that global warming will be here sooner.
It sort of seems to be the recurrent theme in climate news is here's another reason why we have to worry even sooner than we thought we did before.
Yes, exactly.
Great. Well, that's been really informative. Thank you so much for your time.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
Thanks so much. And I think those were some really interesting pieces. Give some pause to think.
Well, I didn't know that before. Dear Science, thanks to MOTAT, the museum inspiring the innovators of tomorrow.